when tariffs morph into recession. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. With China denying that it backpedaled on trade concessions and the U.S. warning of new trade sanctions within hours, the two countries get back to dealing in Washington today. Existing U.S. tariffs on Chinese goods could go higher overnight, and new products could get tariffs sometime soon. Let's get an economic view of that ongoing trade war from Diane Swonk, the chief economist at the tax and accounting firm Grant Thornton.
Depending on how long that went on, 3 to 6 months, that could be enough to tip the U.S. economy into a recession. Not only would it shave 2% off growth off the top of economic growth in the U.S., but also there's the collateral damage of the impact that a slowdown in China would have on the rest of the world.
I mean, that's part of the arsenal of these trade wars. There are the tariffs and those effects. But if you're really talking about triggering recession in China or here, that's the other cudgel.
Exactly. There's the knockoff effects, the contagion effects. And China's the second largest economy in the world, with tentacles into nearly every other economy, developing and developed. We've already seen the slowdown in China have ripple effects for Europe, Japan, and other parts of Asia.
Well, maybe they'll resolve it this afternoon at 3 o'clock, right?
They could, but I wouldn't hold my breath.
Diane Swonk, the chief economist at Grant Thornton, thank you so much.
Thank you.
For the first time since 1882, yes, I say 1882, Britain has not burned any coal for electricity for a full week as it transitions to cleaner energy. Simon Gompertz is a BBC business reporter. Good morning.
Good morning.
So coal-less for a moment across the UK, that's quite a step.
Customers can choose to have renewable power supplies from wind or from solar. But the big development is that the UK is effectively phasing out coal-produced electricity as a big polluter. So there's a charge on that.
So this is the product of policy. That's what I'm hearing. It's not just that the wind was blowing especially briskly across those turbines or that the sun was shining on the solar panels particularly brightly.
Well, the wind has been pretty good, but yeah, it's a policy change. We're still keeping coal, so it will be used in emergencies when there's nothing else, when there's not enough renewable energy and there's not enough gas. And it could be that this summer that we're looking at weeks on end which are coal-free. It's a massive social as well as generational change.
Simon Gompertz, BBC business reporter. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. It's my pleasure.
So Britain's first big coal-fired electricity station went online in 1882. Also that year, Britain passed the Married Women's Property Act, which allowed wives to own property, buy and sell property, and to keep profits. Not till 1882. Here, the states beat Britain by decades. Connecticut had this for women by 1809. John in Minneapolis, Minnesota, wrote to say how much he enjoys our coverage of the economy and that Marketplace helps him make strong arguments and combat misinformation about financial matters. To join John in supporting trustworthy, objective journalism, donate online at marketplace.org. Thanks to all the Marketplace investors who make our work possible.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.
In its regular update, the government said today the number of people signing up for unemployment benefits fell in the last week. These benefits help people back on their feet, but they're also a macroeconomic tool. When recessions hit, it can soften the blow by allowing people to keep spending some. Now, since the Great Recession, some states have been cutting back unemployment benefits. Michelle Evermore is a senior researcher at the National Employment Law Project. She spoke with Marketplace's Sabri Benishour.
Can you give us a lay of the land? What have states and unemployment benefit programs are mostly run by states. What have they generally been doing since the recession?
States have been cutting benefits in a number of ways. One of the biggest is by reducing the number of weeks that people are eligible to receive benefits. But they've also put in place barriers for people to get benefits, like changing the definition of what suitable work would be for them to take in subsequent jobs. One requirement of collecting unemployment benefits is that you have to be ready, willing, and able to take a job. So changing the definition of suitable work means you have to take a less high-quality job as a replacement for your old job. States have also been adopting new technologies that make it harder for people to apply for benefits that increase the digital divide as they put in new tech systems.
There's an example of that in Michigan. Do you want to tell us about that?
Yeah, Michigan put in a system called MIDAS that apparently flagged 20,000 people for fraud, and that system is approximately 93% inaccurate. So a lot of people were falsely accused of fraudulently claiming benefits, and it was, you know, extremely traumatic for those people who are already unemployed.
Why have some states been reducing unemployment benefits and making it harder to get them in the first place? What's the purpose?
It's largely because after the last recession, states obviously found their trust funds depleted because they used them appropriately to pay out benefits during a difficult economic time. Well, so there's two ways to restore the unemployment trust fund. One is to cut benefits and one is to just put money into the fund. Many states have opted to cut benefits for workers rather than putting money in the trust fund. Cutting benefits as a response to underfunded trust funds after a recession makes the subsequent recession more difficult to recover from.
Why not just say, look, if things get bad again, the feds will take care of it?
First, it's very difficult to predict how Congress is going to react. But secondly, should states who have improved their systems and made their systems more accessible and more sufficient get the same federal complement that states who've decided to cut benefits should get? And is that fair?
Michelle Evermore at the National Employment Law Project speaking with my colleague Sabree Benishore. I'm David Brancaccio. This is the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.